This is a Media Lab podcast. Welcome to Putting It Together, the podcast that goes through the entire body of work of Stephen Sondheim, show by show and song by song. My name is Kyle Marshall, your self-described Sondheim expert, and welcome to this little mini-series called Sondheim Revisited. To be honest with you, I don't know if there's going to be... Well, I don't know how many episodes there's going to be of this little mini-series. For sure, I've already recorded 4. There's a 5th that I know I'm going to be recording for sure, and there's 2 other people I'm trying desperately to get onto the podcast, so we'll see if those happen or not. So... at least 5, potentially 7, and also very potentially an 8th. This whole mini-series came about because I did this here a few months ago, right before the Sweeney Todd season, and it gave a chance for an alternate point of view on a song that we had previously covered. And this time, for a lot of the people that I asked to be a part of it, they are new voices, people who have not been on the show before. Because, one, I just really wanted to talk with them, and also, some of them really wanted to talk about songs that we had already covered. So I was like, well, why not just make that be a reality? So I'm excited to share the next few weeks here with you before we officially get into the Merrily We Roll Along season. This week, as you can see from the title of the episode, we are going back to a weekend in the country with a great guest, Mark Bonanni, so we might as well not dilly-dally any longer. Let's get our mint juleps in order. We can go play some croquet and talk about a weekend in the country. Mark Bonanni, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Oh my goodness, thank you so much for having me.
This is going to be a lot of fun. I'll, you know, speak for myself. I'm pretty sure that I really started seeing a lot of your posts on Twitter specifically once you began covering Schmigadoon this past year. So I think first and foremost, we need to start off by you telling us a little bit more about what Broadway by Ghostlight is all about.
So Broadway by Ghostlight came about. I had wanted to be, quote unquote, a theater, musical theater historian. Like that was what I had chosen as my life. But it's like, what is that? People would say, okay, great. What does that mean? And I'd say, I don't know. I didn't feel like writing a book. I don't enjoy writing that much. And podcast, I wasn't feeling the podcast thing, you know? Right. And so I was really into Marvel during right before Infinity War. My wife and I did the whole saga in chronological order anyway. And I got really into these video breakdowns online, new rock stars and people like that doing all these trailer breakdowns and stuff like that. And I thought, God, wouldn't it be so cool if there was like a Broadway version of that? And I thought, well, maybe that'll be fun to try. And so that's where Broadway by Ghostlight was sort of born out of that.
I guess to marry these two things together, like what was your first introduction to theater? Like, I guess what made you fall in love with theater in the first place?
So my family is so not theatrical. They're all like race car drivers and lawyers.
Okay. Great.
And so,
and one's a race car lawyer. It's a really wild.
honestly, they do like car dealership law. Anyway, in fourth grade, we'd done a school play and I sort of enjoyed it. And then my grandfather had a subscription to the local, to the Orange County Performing Arts Center in Southern California. And they, for Christmas, gave me a ticket to see the show with them. And it was Marie Osmond and The Sound of Music.
Wow.
But before I even saw the show, I was given the ticket. And I remember opening that red box and seeing the ticket. And it can only be described as, I would imagine, what priests feel when they're being called. It was like something clicked. And it was just like, oh, this is my life. And
how old were you then? Sorry,
just 10. I was 10.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So I lived in Southern California and knew nothing of New York, knew nothing of Broadway, knew nothing of theater, except for Little Shop of Horrors and Singing in the Rain, because those are the two that my father liked.
Do you still remember that production? Like, do you still have vivid memories of that Sound of Music?
No, not even a little bit, which is horrific. I remember my grandfather and around it, but the production itself, I don't, and I'm so sad about that. I have a terrible memory.
Okay, well, I was about to say,
being like, a historian.
A savage review by a 10-year-old is like forgettable.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, it couldn't have been that great. I remember later seeing Carol Channing tour in Hello Dolly.
Really?
That I remember. I remember her entrance with the newspaper and then her eating those potato puff things.
Yeah.
I mean, I will never forget that.
God, how old would she have been in that tour?
She had to have been
70s?
Late 70s. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
All right.
That, yeah, and Dame Yankees with Jerry Lewis.
Whoa. Okay.
Because I was a huge, while kids were watching, you know, I don't know, Power Rangers or whatever, I was watching Martin and Lewis, Abbott and Costello, like all the black and white comedians.
Right, so, you were one of those kids, yeah.
I was one of those really annoying, weird kids.
It is remarkable, mostly because I had some similar interests when I was growing up, but it's so frustrating to like make a reference to something that is like so second nature to you. And it's like not even people your own age have any clue. And sometimes even people that are like 10 years older than you, like, I still don't know what you're talking about. Like, but
but the good thing is they've never heard these punchlines before. So I can pretend like I'm really funny.
So who's on first is what I'm actually asking. Yeah.
Right. Weird setup, but try this. Yeah, definitely.
So then as you're getting into theater here, then just very curious, just because you started this off by talking about, you know, being into Marvel. Were you a comic book person too as a kid? No. Okay.
No, not at all. I mean, I loved the X-Men 90s cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, no, not at all. And I hadn't seen any of the Marvel movies at all. But then Black Panther came out. And it was such a huge deal. And then Infinity War was happening and it was like the culmination. I was like, well, why not watch it in order? And I absolutely fell in love with every single one of those movies.
I swear I'm not going to devolve this into a Marvel podcast, but just because it does involve musical theater, have you watched the Hawkeye miniseries on Disney Plus at all?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Rogers the Musical. Strange in the air today. The sun is gone and the clouds turn gray. Just what's coming is hard to say. I don't know. There's a battle above the street. The ground is rumbling below our feet. The skies turn red and I feel the heat. Gotta go. Who can save us? A city sings. We need the hope that salvation brings. You've the power to find the light. Avengers assemble and fight the fight. Save the city. Steve Rogers, Captain America, is my guy. That's my hero. So I was all for this. I will say, I'm really sad that people think it's good. Like, people are like, wow, that was really good. I'm like, no, that was not.
No, it was intentionally supposed to be bad. Like, that is what the point of that scene is.
That was terrible. Like, that was horrendous.
What is great is that for people who are Broadway people, like, oh, they have some really great Broadway actors in this, like, throwaway scene.
I mean, it definitely, yeah. Adam Pascal is, like, random citizen number 12. And, yeah, I was all for Rogers the Musical. And I did a video on a real Captain America musical that almost happened in the 80s, which was a lot of fun to research.
Hey, if Superman can have his own musical, Steve Rogers can have his own musical.
That's a rough one, too. I mean, the show is fine, but there's a TV version of It's a Bird, It's a Plane of Superman that if you can watch it, oh boy, yikes.
So you're into theater, of course, as this young kid. What was your first introduction to Stephen Sondheim?
I think it has to be most kids, certainly in my generation, was the filmed version of Into the Woods. Mm-hmm. I mean, I watched that once a week, every week for my entire
child.
I mean, that was it. And, you know, West Side Story and I'm sure, you know, but Into the Woods certainly was my first love. And then actually in high school, I took sort of a musical theater. I had a mentor that would teach me and introduced me to Passion. And I absolutely became obsessed with it because the first time I watched it, I hated it.
Right. Yeah.
But then I feel like I went through a Giorgio, you know, thing with it. And I like became obsessed with it and it grew to love it and be, you know, so it was just so interesting to me, that show. And I love watching people watch it for the first time because inevitably they're just so turned off by Fosca.
Who is this person?
But it's It's yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I fell in love with Passion. I always said that was my favorite show because I felt like it made me seem really smart as well. But,
yeah, push yeah. up your glasses. My favorite show is actually this thing that only ran 200 performances.
Yeah, right.
That's cool. How about Little Night Music? When was your first time getting into Little Night Music?
Little Night Music was actually a blind spot for me in my knowledge for a very long time. I think it was really the 09 revival. It was certainly the first time I'd seen it. And so except for, Send in the Clowns, of course, I don't know that I knew too much about it. It intimidated me for some reason. I guess I thought it was very, I don't know what I thought it was, but it's...
I think a lot of people just assume it's kind of like a stuffy... kind of serious yeah. piece, and then people get into it like, oh, it's very funny. It's like it's a super big comedy.
It's a light little rom-com at the end of the day. Yeah. I mean, it's just a gilded mm-hmm. rom-com.
I want to know more about that 09 revival. Like, how far into the run did you see it?
I saw it, I think, when I saw the original revival cast, okay. but Catherine Zeta-Jones was out which was very sad. Although then the Tony performance happened and maybe I.
This is the hardest thing because I have heard people, I think they've even been on this show, that do tell me that they saw her on Broadway and she was great, or at least very
good. That is what I've heard, and that her Tony performance was a whole different animal.
Yeah, because that Tony Awards performance, I agree. I remember watching them like, oof, that was rough.
Yeah, yeah. And so I saw it that time and I was like, okay. That was enjoyable. Fine. Mm-hmm. But then I saw it again with Bernadette Peters and Elaine Stritch.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like I had never seen or heard anything from that show before. And it absolutely blew me away. I fell in love. That production absolutely lives rent-free in my head. It was, I don't know what, and Angela Lansbury, for God's sake, she was amazing. And like I said, I didn't see Catherine Zeta-Jones, but Stritch and Bernadette brought something to it that was...
Well, I think the quips I see online, somewhat of the unfortunate thing is that Elaine Stritch was kind of known for forgetting her lines in that run, but was the perfect person to play Madame Arnfeld. Like, she just nailed that role.
Oh, yeah. And I don't remember any... I mean, I think rumor is she had an earpiece, but I can't remember how soon into their run I saw it. I saw it around Thanksgiving, but I don't remember when they started. Mm-hmm. But there was no flubs or anything that I noticed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So you're seeing this like kind of new for the first time sort of thing. I guess where do you place A Little Night Music now in kind of your either Sondheim list or your just all-time musicals list?
It's really high up there in my Sondheim list. It really is. I fell in love with that show hard. You know, I go back and forth. You know, I was sort of off Into the Woods for a while, and then now with the encores back in, and I just did a video about the film version. I'm like, oh my God, this is a masterpiece. So it's so hard, but it's definitely one of my faves. And Weekend in the Country is a huge part of that, actually.
Oh yeah, what a great Act One closer! I think it's one of the best.
It's the greatest Act One closer. I was trying to think of other amazing Act One closers today, and I really think it's got to be the best.
Yeah, especially as when you think about the conceit of theater, right, where there is that intermission period for most musicals, when you nail this number, I can't imagine most people being like, well, I'm out of this theater. It's like, no, I'm gonna come back, I'm gonna see what's going on.
It leaves you wanting to not have an intermission. It's like, it's like a cliffhanger at the end of an episode of, Stranger Things, which I'm watching right now, which is why it came to my head. It's like, oh my God, no, I got to watch the rest right now. Cause it's so thrilling. Cause it's its own little play, which sort of Sondheim talks about in his tones. How it's this sort of play within a play almost musically. And it so perfectly wraps up the first act and gets you anticipating and can't wait for the second act. It's truly extraordinary.
Yeah, like this song was written very quickly in that they went into their rehearsal period without this song being written. They didn't really have an Act One closer. Hal Prince says, why don't you write like a little operetta that just like tells everyone's reactions to Madame Arnfeld's letter? Sondheim in that time then conceives of this, writes it, presents it, and they choreograph it all within that 5-week period. Like, it was a very quick turnaround to get this song to where it needs to be.
Absolutely incredible. Yeah, because I have a backers audition for A Little Night Music, the CD, and it's not on there, obviously.
Yeah. Just imagine Sondheim doing all the voices. It'd been great. But
no, I would like to see that. That would be something.
What is happening in the show, like right before we go into this song?
Well, it's all been building up. We've got this. Oh God, I feel like I have to go through the whole plot to it. So you've got the Eggermans. Mm-hmm. You've got Anne, who has interesting non-relations, I guess, with her husband, who's being enticed by an old flame, the actress Desiree Armfelt, and invites the family for a weekend at her mother's estate as a complete trap. And everybody knows it. And then she initially says she's not going to go. And then, well, that's during the song. You're asking what happened before the song. Basically, yeah, she's laying this trap to ensnare herself a husband.
Yeah. Yeah, that's basically exactly right. Like, Charlotte's on her way to convince Anne to actually go to this little right. makeup thing that they're doing. And so it's everything's coming to head. All the plot lines in Act 1 are kind of like all coming and hitting each other all at once.
Speaking of the 09 revival, yeah, hold on. Yeah. I realize this is a podcast and your people can't see. But from the 09, I love that production so much. I have the weekend invitation.
Oh,
this is the actual prop invitation signed by Bernadette Peters.
That's amazing. How did you get a hold of that?
I'm an avid prop collector. This was actually just from Broadway Cares auction.
Oh, gotcha. I thought you maybe like snuck onto the stage somehow. Or...
I have snuck onto stages and I have quite the collection, but there's my weekend in the country.
You actually have Milky White from the last Into the Woods. Yeah.
I have a friend in the show. I'm working her hard to get me something good.
Just the red cape. I just need the red cape.
You know, a cow is white as milk, cape is red as blood, hair is... It's all there.
It's all there.
You got the list of what I need.
Hey everyone, just Kyle breaking into the conversation here to tell you about some of the people and organizations that help this show continue to go. Of course, if you'd like to help support the show for absolutely free, you can give a rating and review on whatever app you use to listen to podcasts. It's greatly appreciated, and if you'd like to help monetarily, which will only help to grow and make the show better, you can do so over at our Patreon page. Right now, I don't know if people actually realize this, there is this article, I guess, that Sondheim contributed to back in 2006 in the Sondheim Review, where he actually listed out his 40 favorite films of all time, alphabetically. He didn't really comment on any of them. It was just that here's my 40 favorite films as of 2006. And so what I've been doing over there is kind of like bonus episodes. My attempt is once a week, but sometimes it's every other week, depending on how busy my schedule goes. And I'm going in reverse alphabetical order, having a discussion and writing a review and kind of going into depth about how it feels like some of these speak to his work that he's done, and also what it might say about him as a person, because I like to psychoanalyze, even though that's something that he would have absolutely hated. Anyways, that's some of the Patreon content that you can expect over there if you do want to be one of those people who help support, but please do not donate if it impacts you negatively financially. I will give a shout out, thank you to our new patron this week of Ted. Thanks so much for joining us over there, Ted. And I also need to give a huge thank you to the God That's Good tier from Patreon of Jack, Todd, Carrie, Louise, Christopher, and Steven. Putting Together is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. This episode of Putting It Together is brought to you by Taproot Spotlight, a service that helps businesses and organizations pay attention to the people they serve. Taproot tells you the news about the people and companies that are important to you. Use that information internally to keep everyone on the same page, or share it with the world in your newsletter, on your website, and on your social media channels. Paying attention pays dividends. Find out more at taprootpublishing.ca/spotlight. That's taprootpublishing.ca/spotlight. This week we're also brought to you by PodPower, and with PodPower, our sponsors are making it possible for us to amplify the voices of Albertans and Alberta podcasters. This episode, the Edmonton Community Foundation is helping us give a PodPower shout out to Your Forest. Your Forest is a podcast about the natural world. Hear stories about the environment, renewable resources, conservation, forestry, hunting, fishing, and more. This is a podcast for those who cannot live without the joys and wonders of all wild things. Find Your Forest wherever you get your podcasts at yourforestpodcast.com. That's yourforestpodcast.com. So I've broken this out into about like 9 different audio clips here. We are going to focus on that 09 revival. I thought it would be good just to give credit where credit is due here then in this case. So in order of appearance, at least I'm pretty sure this is the order of appearance and everyone is accounted for. Even though the whole company comes on at the very end, I'm just focusing on the people who get solos. So we have Petra, who was portrayed by Leanne Larkin, Anne was by former guest Ramona Mallory. Frederick is Alexander Hansen. Charlotte is Aaron Davey. Carl Magnus, Aaron Lazar. And Henrik, Hunter Ryan Herdlicka, is the people that you're going to be hearing on this recording. And so, yes, A Weekend in the Country starts, the letter has arrived, and this is what you would hear.
Look, ma'am, an invitation here, ma'am delivered by hand, and ma'am, I noticed the stationery is engraved in very grand. Petra, oh, too exciting, just when I need it. Petra, such elegant writing, so chic, you hardly can read it. What do you think? Who can it be? Even the ink, no, here, let me. Your present, just think of it, Petra, is kindly, it's addition to, requested, etc., etc., Madame Leonora.
Now, if people don't know, I just want to bring this kind of little fun fact out here again. Do you know the interesting connection between this and the original production of A Little Night Music, specifically for the Anne character?
Of Ramona?
Yeah.
Yes, as the daughter. She is the daughter of the original Henrik, and which is amazing. It's one of my favorite, I think, theater connections ever.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool to have that little bit of connection to the original. But anything you want to say about this opening bit here between Petra and Anne?
I just love, you know, before we did this today, I was like, okay, I'm going to go through, because I have, you know, mm-hmm. 5 or 6 different recordings of the show, or like 10 mm-hmm. or 12, if I'm being honest. And so I listened to different versions and I love it. I think the song is best when it's well acted, mm-hmm. when they put emphasis on the acting and let the acting breathe. And I feel like this production does a really good job here. And I feel like the Anne here really feels young. I feel like you get that youngness. Often she could feel smart as a whip. But she really feels like the young girl in distress. And her "oh no" just kills me.
When we were doing the All Night Music season, this is kind of the continual conversation we had about Anne. Is like, how do we approach her, especially in a modern context? Like, what are we supposed mm-hmm. to feel for her? Like, what actresses have imbued what attributes to her? And I think the biggest thing here is that, yeah, she is a little bit in over her head. She is mm-hmm. kind of caught in between. It's like, she is an adult, quote unquote, but is still very childlike in her demeanor. And mm-hmm. I'm going to call out Sondheim one more time here. This is a great thing. In that he does have his characters sing differently, right? Petra is singing differently than what Anne is singing like here. Like, it's not just like the same mm-hmm. types of verses that he's giving each of his characters, which is kind of fun to play around with here too. Mm-hmm. I'm going to continually call this out probably through this entire song, but the more you delve into his rhyme scheme in this song, it blows my mind what he is able to kind of get, because like invitation is rhyming with the station, and then Airy kind of continues on to the next line. But then you have some fun here with like, you think, the ink, can it be, let me, like, there's just some
stationary. There's a fun one with stationary.
Yeah, the stationary one is fun.
And then, yeah.
He was really thinking hard on how
to make all this work. It's incredible. Do you know what, when I was thinking, another random thought, do you know what finger tutting is?
No, I don't think I do.
Really random. Finger tutting is like a sort of dance style, but like people who do like weird thing with their fingers and make all these weird intricate shapes. And it's, anyway, look up finger tutting, but it reminded me of how he works with the lyrics, how it it's seemingly on another, it's just on another level of consciousness, seemingly.
I think it's one of those things where, because they are so compact and natural sounding, you can almost forget, like, oh, this is actually all rhyming at the same time. I think that's what always impresses me, is like, I wouldn't know on probably first listen that he's rhyming invitation with station airy. Like, it just rolls off and it sounds right.
Yeah. I could have written this one song and retired on that and been like, this is, I'm a genius.
well, I've made a masterpiece and goodbye. I mean, everyone. Right? It's
just done and finished with life. But no, you kept going.
Right. Well, let's keep going. Here is what the next part of the song here sounds like.
A weekend in the country.
We're invited.
What a horrible plot. A weekend in the country.
I'm excited.
No, you're not.
A weekend in the country.
Just imagine. It's completely depraved.
A weekend in the country.
It's insulting.
It's engraved.
It's that woman. It's that Armfeld.
Oh, the actress.
Oh, the ghoul. She may hope to make a charm felt, but she's mad if she thinks I would be such a fool as to weekend in the country.
How insulting.
And I've nothing to wear. A weekend in the country. Here, the last place I'm going is there.
Charmfeld and Armfeld is the best one. I mean,
it's that is one of my favorite little sections. There's just so many good bits in there. I'm trying to.
Well, I think it's because it really does sound like they're having a conversation, right? I think this goes back to that acting thing you were talking about, right? Like, Petra's not saying we're invited as a statement. She's asking it as a question. So you need to understand, it's like, we're invited. Like, this whole household is invited.
Mm-hmm.
And Anne being like, well, we're definitely not going. I am putting my foot down. We are not going to where that horrible woman is. Or the ghoul, I guess, is how she phrases it.
In all the live recordings I listened to today of different productions, the original, the national tour, London productions, it's engraved, always gets the biggest laugh without fail from the audience.
Yeah, because normally, at least the two productions I have seen, both filmed, is like Petra's like grabbing the letter and like looking at it, and it says it's engraved. So like she's like marveling at the letter, right? She's not really even listening to what Anne is saying here at this point.
Yeah, at certain productions, if you know, she says, "Here, let me," and like she's not taking it. It's like the direction is in the song, and sometimes they don't listen, and it drives me crazy. Certain productions are better than others. This one did a good job. The 1990 New York Civic Light Opera one also did a really good job. Really good, well acted.
I guess I haven't checked in a while. It was available on YouTube, so if you want to go and check that out, you definitely can.
Yeah, that's a good point. And here, when she says, "I have nothing," and I've nothing to wear, it's my favorite version of that line, because I feel like she's the only actress who, I feel like that line sort of betrays herself, like that she's actually thinking about going, you know. I don't know what I'm saying, but
no,
that line delivery is my favorite.
I think, yeah, again, it just imbues Anne with a little bit more character in her piece, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes what can happen, at least I feel, is that people can lean too far in one way or the other, where she's just too childlike, or she's maybe too upset or something like that. And here it's like she's both, right? Yeah, I don't want to go. And oh, by the way, I also don't have anything to wear, so it doesn't even matter.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost, anyway. I mean, that's a bit, I say, sound like a sitcom-y, but it's almost like a sitcom-y line. I mean, it's a gag line, and it I feel like it's brushed off.
Hold for applause, easily. Hold for applause.
Yeah, and I have nothing to wear. You know, it's just, it's a, anyway.
Now, this is a good point, a good spot, sorry, to bring this up. So in this version of the song, if you listen to this revival on the album release, they basically leave in all the book scenes here as well. So you actually hear a lot of the talking bits. I've actually cut all those parts out just for our listen through here today. But my question to you is, this is a hot button issue, I find, for like Broadway nerds. Do you enjoy cast albums that have a lot of the speaking bits included?
You know, part of me really appreciates it. I'm like, the more the better. But there are some times where I'm like, just stop talking. It's not in this song. I feel like this, it's all one piece. It's designed as one. But I was thinking, like, the cast album for Ain't Too Proud randomly pops into my head. There is so much dialogue on that CD, especially like before a song. It's really not great. Because you just want to hear the song. I'm not, I don't need context. Just give me the song.
Yeah. But, the hard part is that, like, I can go both ways on this, but as someone who rarely gets out to New York to enjoy these Broadway shows, a part of me does like having some of that context provided, but at the same time, yeah, when I've listened to it dozens of times, like, yeah, just get to the part where I want to actually listen to the song.
Yeah, it can be excessive. I think it's a case by case basis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Frederick is going to now kind of join us here in a moment, but this is how the song continues to go.
Guess what? An invitation.
Yes, who begins with an A? Felt is that a relation to the decrepit Desiree?
Guess when we're asked to go, sir, see, sir, the date there. Guess where a fancy chateau, sir.
Guess to whose lying in wait. They're setting her traps, fixing her face.
Darling, perhaps a change of pace.
Oh,
a weekend in the country would be charming and the air would be fresh.
A weekend with that woman.
In the country.
In the flesh.
I've some business with her mother.
See, it's business.
Oh, no doubt. But the business with her mother would be hardly the business I'd worry about.
Just a weekend in the country.
Smelling jasmine.
Watching little things grow.
A weekend in the country.
Go!
My darling will simply say no.
Oh.
All right.
It makes me laugh so much.
Which part? The very end there?
Oh, so many of it. The business with her mother would be hardly the business I'd worry about.
About.
I mean, that's genius. Also, her oh at the end there, that kills me. Her little oh.
Oh, yeah, this is great. I mean, just to call it out, but watching little things grow, I think that's a great little dig at her husband there.
A little, definitely, definitely. It's so funny. I actually watched an all-male version of this where they really played up that line from Broadway backwards. And that was fun.
I love the one that, like, begins with an A, decrepit Desiree. That's the
decrepit
rhyme that's
Desiree.
Happening in that, which is great.
I'm a sucker for alliteration, so.
Exactly. I'm trying to see if there's another one here that I like.
And she hits that decrepit, too, Ramona.
Decrepit.
She hits that decrepit so well. And I love Petra's, like, lighthearted scheming to try to get away to this weekend retreat.
Just going back to how this portion ends, it is one of those classic Sondheim runs of him rhyming a bunch of stuff, which is like watching little things grow. Anne says go. Frederick ends by saying no, and then Anne says oh. Like, so he just keeps rhyming things at the end just to kind of add them up. And the melody is kind of bouncy, as we kind of heard in that clip there too, right? Like, I always think of Weekend in the Country kind of like as a steam engine in a way, because it's like it's gathering, gathering, gathering until like blows apart or keeps
absolutely
explodes at the very end.
Thrilling. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, he makes this boring, they're talking about how boring it is for most of it, and it's the most thrilling song.
That is true. We are, what is this? We're like 2 and a bit minutes into this song, and really the conversation has been, we're going to go to the country? like, we still don't know if they're going to go to the country or not. Like, they're still deliberating on it. This is when Charlotte makes her appearance here into the song, so we'll hear her.
Erin Davey.
But also inept.
A weekend, of course, we're refusing.
Au contraire, you must accept.
Oh, no!
A weekend in the country.
But it's frightful.
No, you don't understand. A weekend in the country is delightful if it's planned. Wear your hair down and a flower. Don't use makeup, dress in white. She'll grow older by the hour and be hopelessly shattered by Saturday night. Spend a weekend in the country.
We'll accept it.
I'd a feeling you would.
A weekend in the country.
Yeah.
It's only polite that we should.
Brilliant.
Yeah, Erin Davey's great.
I am obsessed with Erin Davey. I'm a huge Erin Davey stan.
But like, oh gosh, hopelessly shattered by Saturday night. It's just such a fun thing to say. Like, it's just
it's so good. Hopelessly shattered by Saturday night is,
the way Ramona Mallory does, of course we're refusing. Like, she wants to make
of course we're refusing.
Make it very clear that, like, they are not interested in going this. And Charlotte barely has to say anything for her to be like, oh, actually, we're going to go. You're right. We should go.
Yeah, totally.
Frightful with delightful is a fun little rhyme here. Dressed white, Saturday night is what the rhyme is there. And then we have, I guess it's only polite that we should, good, is how it, how
you never kind of that also gets double big rhyme. Laughs, big laughs in the live recordings.
Well, here comes, of course, the most level-headed character of the entire piece, which is Carl Magnus. So,
this is my favorite section by far.
This is what Carl Magnus says.
Well, I have an intriguing little social item.
What?
Out of the Armfeld family manse.
Well, what?
Merely a weekend, still I thought it might amuse you to know who's invited to go, this time with his pants.
You don't mean...
I'll give you 3 guesses.
She wouldn't.
Reduce it to 2.
It can't be.
It nevertheless is.
Eggerman.
Right, score 1 for you.
Aha!
Ha ha!
Aha.
Aha.
A weekend in the...
Okay. This is like the musical theater equivalent of edging, because I'm cutting that off a little halfway through.
Right, right.
But I do want to just talk a little bit about some of their vocal choices, which is that, like, aha, aha. Like, they just aren't quite sure what the other one is thinking at that moment,
right?
Which is funny.
The whole scene with just grunts, basically. I mean, uh-huh, uh-huh. I mean, it's that's so good. Also, the way he, who is this, Aaron Lazar? Am I?
Yes, Aaron Lazar for Carl Magnus.
The way he does the, well, what, is so funny, because almost everybody else just is, you know, well, what? And
yeah.
He does it in the beginning, but then she mentions the Armfeldt, and
yeah.
And then it, oh well, what? I mean, that's
yeah, Armfeldt.
So
that's I like her. The fact though that Mance is rhyming with pants later on is like the funniest thing to me. But the other one I think that is wild is social item is it mightum. Use you, like that is what is.
Wow,
that's what it, that's what the rhyme is in that case.
That's nuts.
Again, you could retire. You could retire after writing this song if you wanted.
You could.
We should try.
Oh, whoops. I'll start that again. But yeah, you could retire if you really wanted to.
You could. I mean, this. I would give him the Pulitzer for this song and then retire on the accolades alone. Totally worth it.
At the very end there, it's like, I'll give you 3 guesses, reduce it to 2.
Reduce it to 2.
You got it.
I say that all the time now, reduce it to 2.
Which then rhymes, of course, with score 1 for you, right? That's... Anyways, some great stuff here. This is now the part, of course, where a bunch of people are going to start to sing over top of one another. So in the original episode, I do go through like what everyone is actually saying, but... It's more fun if you just hear it.
Yeah.
As a wall of sound.
A weekend in the country, we should try it.
How I wish we'd been asked.
A weekend in the country, peace and quiet.
We'll go masked.
A weekend in the country.
Uninvited, they'll consider it odd.
A weekend in the country, I'm delighted.
Oh my God.
And the shooting should be pleasant if the weather's not too rough. Happy birthday, it's your present. You haven't been getting out nearly enough. And a weekend in the country.
It's perverted.
Pack my quiver and bow. A weekend in the country. At exactly 2:30 we go.
We can't.
We shall.
We shan't.
I'm getting the car and we're motoring down.
Yes, I'm certain you are, but I'm staying in town.
Go!
I will.
Well,
we should.
Pack everything
fine.
I own that shoots.
Are you sure it's all right?
We'll be making it
out.
I'll take the car.
So, the... Talking about that acting... Or returning back to that acting piece... I love the fact that basically Carl Magnus in the back half of this song is just yelling Charlotte's name. Like that's all he is there to do. He's like, Charlotte, Charlotte.
I'd love to get my stuff. And she's like, don't shout. And he's like, Charlotte. I mean, I love that. Also, in the beginning of the section, we'll go masked, which is, you know, that's such a funny line now. It's such a different context now. We'll go masked.
True.
I'll always think of it differently. But I love that it's happy birthday. It's your present. Like, he just clearly doesn't have a present for her.
She's like,
it'll be your present.
Spur
I love
of
that.
The moment. What a man thing to do. Can I just say that? Just throw my own gender under the bus. But it's just like,
right?
Oh, I forgot. This is your birthday present.
The spur thing, of the moment thing. There you go.
Yeah.
Such an ass.
What is it? The peace and quiet. We should try it. Peace and quiet. That's what's being there. Asked and masked.
Oh my God. The way she says, Aaron Davies says
right.
That.
Consider it odd. And then, oh my God. Right.
Oh that's, my God.
That's the rhyming couplet there. But I think that kind of ending section that we were listening to there as their voices all coming together. This is where, when you're watching on stage, it's so thrilling because it's like, you fundamentally understand what everyone is saying. If you don't picking up like every single line that is being sung here. It's like, okay, this couple's doing this, that couple's doing this, and this couple is doing this. And so it's all kind of working together. Yeah. They're shouting over top of one another.
And it's like, you know, what they're, the emotions and the, you know, the vibe is more important than exactly what they're saying, I think, in those moments. You know, we sort of know the argument. And I love, it was this song that he was concerned about writing the way he wanted to write Sondheim. And then he went to Hal, and Hal showed him in the rehearsal space how he could make it work, jumping from location to location, which freed him up to write even more. And then for the film, he wrote even more.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is, when you watch the evolution of Sondheim through the 70s, each show basically reveals a new bag of tricks that he kind of like perfects in the 80s is my working theory that I've been doing here recently, because it's so true. Like each show in the early 70s, like, can I do this? Oh, I can. Can I do this? Yes, I can. And he kind of just keeps replicating that in subsequent shows. And this is one of them. Yeah. The only thing that I will say, like, this is a very Sondheim-y thing that was happening here, where people are having their own lines, singing over top of each other. They're not worried about the same melody or the same time signature even. Mm. But the next part that we're about to go into is actually something that he very rarely does, which is have all the people on stage sing the same thing at the same time. He was very anti that. Like, he really did not like doing it, because he said, unless it's a very specific situation, not everyone on stage should be singing the same thing, because not everyone is thinking the same thing in crowds. But maybe in this case, it's like... they're all wanting to go to the country, so we're able to, like, all, you know, go against his rule here. But talk about great rhymes. Let's jump into this as they sing.
We're off on our way, what a beautiful day for a weekend in the country. How amusing, how delightfully droll. A weekend in the country, as we're losing our control. A weekend in the country, how enchanting all the manicured lawns. A weekend in the country, with the panting and the yawns. With the crickets and the pheasants, and the orchards and the hay. With the servants and the peasants, we'll be laying our plans while we're playing croquet. For a weekend in the country, so inactive that one has to lie down. A weekend in the country,
Okay, so before we hear Henrik rain on everyone's parade here.
Laying our plans while we're playing croquet is my one of my favorite lines. I don't know what it is about that line, but it just sends
the fact
me.
That he's rhyming the hay with croquet is, yeah, I think, one of my favorite things in there. But this whole section is like, it's so, for me at least, as a musical theater fan and a lover of rhyme, it's like, it just hits my ear so well, this entire section, right? It's like, even later on, where it's like, with the crickets and the pheasants and the orchards, or sorry, the one right above that, on the manicured lawns, a weekend in the country with the panting and the yawns.
Like,
it's so evocative. You know exactly what they're talking about, this lazy day out in the rich country, in the rich countryside, but with like the least amount of words that you need to make that your point.
It's, you know, it's so crazy that he can keep the different intents, the while rhyming. It's like, you know, like some people can build with bricks, and then there's like an earthbender who can just will the earth to him. I feel like he can will rhymes and music to his genius, and that's incredible.
It's, yeah, it's just incredibly impressive, because that's the other thing that kind of we keep coming back to on this show, is that I think there's sometimes people will like either like parody or trying to like, this is my like Sondheim song or my send up of Sondheim. And very often I find what people try and do is use like very verbose language. And for some reason, for whatever reason, because like, well, that's not quite how he did it. Sure, he would sometimes use verbose language, but the majority of his rhymes are just simple words that he's just figured out a way to kind of like match them. That's the hard thing. He makes the simplicity of his words very complex, because he's layering them on. Like in this song, for instance, where it's like, I'm going to rhyme this with three stanzas ago and come back here and like pay it off in two more lines from now.
Yeah.
It's like, God, how do you do that?
I mean, I think that harkens back to his mentor, Oscar Hammerstein II, in the simplicity. And then I feel like also a little bit of Larry Hart from Rodgers and Hart with the rhyme scheme thing. But that's, I guess, another conversation.
That'll be my next podcast. We'll go
there
through
you go.
The Rodgers and Hart songbook.
Sign me up for that one. I'm all about it. I love Lorenz Hart, too. He's one of my favorite subjects.
So let's hear from Henrik here. This is basically like the little rain cloud above his head as he sings.
A weekend in the country, the lives. The shallow worldly figures, the frivolous lives, the devil's companions know not whom they serve. It might be instructive to observe.
First off, to steal from like another very well-known person who used language, I think he doth protest too much. I love the fact that he refers, and one of these being his actual father, the devil's companions.
It's so funny. This section is so odd. It's just, I don't know. It's so interesting to choose to break up the momentum in such a way. I guess that's the intent.
Yeah. Let's slow everything down for a moment. Let him say, the only thing that this is communicating is like, hate these people, but I might want to see what they're up to. So he's going to tag
along. It's like a little, it's like Victorian goth, I feel like, is you know, his vibe here.
He like flips the hair out of his eyes. I'm like, I guess.
And he was playing the cello, I think, if I remember correctly, in this production. He was accompanying himself on the cello while singing this section.
It's a very Henrik maneuver, playing the cello all the time. So would not surprise me. All right. So let's go into the very final section here, which is great. Which is going to surprise no one. Like Carmax is still yelling Charlotte. Riotous applause. People
buzzing into the night. I mean, few songs make me want to change my life and become a conductor. I mean,
quite like
that
this
song,
one, yeah.
You really want to just get in there and just conduct the crap out of it.
Get those horns at the very end. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, just...
If I'm going to make any type of like negative criticism, there's one small little pet peeve I have right here, which I don't know if I brought up the last time we talked about this. Even though I like the setup, with riotous laughter, we quietly suffer, the season in town, which is reason enough for. So suffer and enough for is what's supposed to be the rhyme there. So I guess if you, enough for, like you could say it if you had like an accent.
I was going to say, it's kind of a California accent. So that's something I would say.
If you're going to do like the high class British accent, I don't think that actually 100% works. And it's the only one that I can say is like really like, oh, that's not 100% a great rhyme there. But everything else is great, so I'm willing to forgive it.
I love delightfully droll, and that's obviously not a rhyme, but it's another great alliteration.
No, but while we're losing our control, that's what's rhyming with droll.
I love this last section because it feels like a microcosm of the whole number. It's like, it starts off with dissonance and argument and then sort of evolves into everyone on the same page and like, all right, we're doing this. And to the big finish.
I think you called it out too. Like, I think what really makes this really hit home is not just like the chorus on stage, which is always so fun when like the whole company can come be on stage and be singing at full volume, ending in town, great, right? They can elongate that vowel as much as they want. But it's the orchestra, too. Like, you have to give props to the orchestra, because even if it's a small one, it's like you can go kind of like full ham at this point. And it's like, it's not too much, basically. It's like, yeah, go for it. It's fine.
Yeah. And it's, you know, for such a intimate game, mental chess, you know, you must meet my wife and things like that. So for it just to explode out with this, I don't know, verve. Is really, really thrilling.
Now, have you watched the 1977 film that they made out of this?
Where they're in the those cars seem so dangerous. They're driving in the song. I rewatched the number before this, and they're in those cars. It was like, oh my God, slow down. You're on basically a board with wheels.
No seatbelts, nothing.
They're just zooming along. And they almost run over a chicken at the very end too, which I've never noticed before. Interesting acting choices, or lack thereof. It seems they just seem to sing. They're like, oh, well, I'm singing. I can't have individual thoughts. I just have to keep my mouth moving. Right. That's what it seems a lot of it.
It is so baffling to me because I really don't like the movie version, but like it's fascinating to me that Hal Prince couldn't bring any of the stuff that made his stuff work on stage translate into film. I understand that they're two completely different mediums, but like you would think that someone who thought visually like he did would be able to like, okay, I'm going to compose this shot.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre.
So many, you know, direct, maybe it said he wasn't a choreographer. I feel like the best.
Maybe. Cause Fosse is great. Like if you want to watch Fosse's movies,
Rob
like,
Marshall, you know, a lot of these people were choreographers and director choreographers. So maybe there's something to that. I don't know. But yeah, you would think that, I mean, Hal Prince certainly could have. Yeah.
But that being said, like, there's some moment, this probably the only moment, like, this sequence in the movie, there's at least some essence of, I don't know, fun and momentum. It's like the only time in the movie that I'm like, okay, maybe. And then, no, it just goes back to being, like, fairly boring and pedestrian after that. So,
yeah. I like that Madame Armfelt. Madame Armfelt gets a little verse in there, which is
that's right.
Cute.
But they cut her liaisons, and I'll never forgive them for it.
Liaisons, yeah.
Have you done a breakdown of A Little Night Music at all?
No, I haven't. I try to do for my breakdowns. I try to focus on shows that don't have a film version or aren't based on a film, so that I try to find shows that unless you have the script, you're not going to find out.
Okay,
you're not going to know the plot. But I've been trying to toy around with like 10 things. Like I did Sweet Charity. I want to do something with shows that are sort of well known, but just, you know, other aspects too.
Complete aside, the Sweet Charity movie, I also have a deep love for.
Yes.
The Big Daddy sequence in that with Sammy Davis Jr. is one of my absolute favorite musical theater sequences of all time. It is so good.
1000%. Ben Vereen, like a young Ben Vereen.
Yeah. Like I feel like, have ever done this in my life, but I feel like that could be like I could do a class just on that scene. It's like,
totally.
Look at these cuts, and this is why this is important, and this is how he does everything, and why it's important to introduce the characters at this moment, and like it's all works so perfectly. Anyways,
so good.
Nothing to do with this song at all, but if you see the Sweet Charity movie, that sequence is so good.
And then when Sammy like riffs on the end, oh
my god, so good.
To your daddy, take a dive and swim to your daddy. It's a far and from to your daddy. Yeah! Let me hear it! Sock it to me! Let it all hang out!
My only complaint, the Sammy Davis Jr. YouTube channel, which there is a thing, has that scene like officially uploaded. They cut too soon. He's doing his riff and everything, and they cut like a second and a half before the song actually officially ends. And it's you finished too quickly.
That's such a shame. And he's so funny in the little scene after when he's, right before the cops show up, he's so funny in that scene. That's one of my dream roles. You just do that one number and then like maybe you're in the ensemble later. It's but like, you just like,
bye everyone.
Come in, kill it. It's like Teen Angel. You just do your one number and get out.
It was like Pete Davidson on Saturday Night Live. You just come show up, do Weekend Update and then you leave. You
and then just check out and date.
Kim Kardashian, what better life could there possibly be?
Oh God,
Mark, thank you so much for being a guest here on the show.
My God, thank you so much for having me, letting me fangirl out over some Sondheim.
I guess I should ask, if we can end the country, if we're just looking at the score of A Little Night Music, this feels almost stupid after all the praise we've heaped on it, but like top three, middle three, bottom three, how would you rank it in the order of the score?
Top one.
Yeah, I mean, was gonna say probably top song.
I mean, Now, Later, Soon.
There's some good stuff.
It's a G, but it's definitely top three for sure. And I think the greatest act one closer of all time.
If people wanted to see what you're up to, follow you online, what's the easiest way to do so?
You could go to YouTube at you can follow me. I'm Broadway by Ghostlight, or on Twitter at Bway Ghostlight.
Here is the hard question I'm ending this mini-series off with. What Sondheim show that you have not seen a live production of already would be like number one on your list? Like, I want to see a production of this.
I have never seen a live production of A Funny Thing Happened on the way to the Forum. They were supposed to do a revival with James Corden before he got the Late Show. It was like in,
it was like
ready
in the cards,
to be
announced. I heard. Yeah, yeah.
Really.
Which I know everyone's like anti-James Corden right now, but like,
I don't get it.
Of all the roles, he would kill that. He would kill that role.
So I was going to say Saturday Night, but then I realized I've never seen a production of A Funny Thing. And I want to see a really funny, funny production of that show.
I agree. I mean, I feel like we are probably, at least for the next few years, in for a bunch of Broadway Sondheim revivals, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Especially with Into the Woods and the rumored Sweeney Todd. Yeah, the rumored Sweeney Todd that's supposed to be coming. But
Signature Theater is doing three of them. It's going to be a lot. And hey, I'm for it.
Maybe we'll get another Passion to come back. Who knows?
Ooh, I love the off-Broadway one they did in 2013 with Judy Kuhn. And,
right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was really good.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you so much. First Thor, unleash your lightning. Then Natasha, that's your cue. Yes! Then Hawkeye hit the bullseye. There's no better shot than you.
Right! Tony, you got nukes to catch. Be careful not to crash. Thanks so much for listening. You can send emails to puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow Sondheim Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And you can support the show on Patreon by going to patreon.com/puttingittogetherpodcast. Thank you to the Alberta Podcast Network, to Taproot Publishing, and to Pod Power this week. Putting It Together is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much anywhere you can get podcasts from. Consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode. Next week, well, I'm still going to be here, even if I have to stuff those dailies into my shoes. As always, a big thank you to the great Chris Taniguchi, who designed the podcast artwork, and to Nick Driscoll for composing our theme music. Well, we've reached the end of our episode. Yes, I know. Goodbye for now.